One of the most consequential journalists of our time is calling it a career. Washington Post executive editor Marty Baron may be best known to the public through the actor who played him in the Oscar-winning film Spotlight. Here's Liev Schreiber capturing the way Baron pushed the Boston Globe to investigate sexual misconduct in the Catholic Church.
A Boston priest abused 80 kids. We have a lawyer who says he can prove law knew about it, and we've written all of two stories in the last 6 months. This strikes me as an essential story to a local paper.
The Globe went on to win a Pulitzer, one of 17 Baron has had a hand in. His accomplishments also include being my boss twice at the Globe and at the Post. And Marty Baron joins us now via Skype. Marty, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you, Cal. Appreciate it.
So you're retiring at the end of this month, and I think most of the journalism world is sorry to see you go, with the possible exception of the Boston Globe's current editor, Marty, who may be happy that you won't be around to recruit his reporters down to the Washington Post anymore. But in all seriousness, why did you decide that now is the right time?
Well, I'm retirement age. I'm past retirement age. I've been the top editor at three news organizations now for 20 years. I've been in the business for 45. I've done that all without a break. I would like to have more personal time and personal liberty. And it seems like a good place to do that. There's a new administration. It seems like a natural turning point. The Post is in a really good place. So it seems like a really good time to move on.
In a note to the Post staff, you listed some of the biggest stories of your career. There was the Catholic Church investigation that I mentioned at the top. Before that, of course, there was Bush v. Gore in Florida when you were the top editor at the Miami Herald. At the Post, you revealed the NSA's sweeping surveillance program through documents leaked by Edward Snowden. Marty, I'd love to know if there's a less famous story that sticks in your memory. Maybe there's something from your early career that helped shape you?
You know, the Elian Gonzalez case in Florida was hugely important. Tremendous tensions within that community over the Cuban boy who had been picked up at sea. His mom tried to get him out of Cuba. She died at sea, and he had relatives in Miami. They wanted him to stay in the United States, but his father, who was still in Cuba, wanted him back, as you'll recall. And there was a huge custody dispute. And ultimately, the federal government went in and seized him and returned him to his father, who was then waiting in Washington. It is a hugely important story in Florida and raised a lot of important issues as well, and brought to the fore some significant ethnic tensions within Florida itself.
Did you take something from that story, Marty, that influenced the way you covered either immigration issues or policy matters or human interest stories going forward?
Yeah, I think so. You know, an area that we could have improved even at the Miami Herald was to even listen more closely to members of the Cuban American community. You know, they felt as if this boy had somehow gotten over the equivalent of the wall in Berlin and had made it to freedom, and that it made no sense and it was unjust to return him to Cuba. And agree or disagree, it was our obligation as journalists to listen and listen closely to what they were saying and why they were saying that. We did that. I still think that we might have done better. And so that is a lesson I took from that experience.
So, Marty, the first time we worked together was on the 2012 campaign at the Boston Globe. And I will say that there were plenty of tense moments covering that election, but I almost always felt like the relationship between the presidential campaigns and the press was respectful. That wasn't the case in 2016 and 2020. So what's your assessment of where things stand now between politicians and the media?
Well, there's always going to be tension between politicians and the media. I think certainly during the Trump administration, it was at a very low point. I hope we don't go lower than that. Look, he described us as enemies of the people, as traitors, as garbage, scum. The administration, in many instances, treated us that way. And then its followers, whether they were politicians or ordinary citizens, started to treat the press that way. I hope we were beyond that. I think that there will always be tensions between the press and government officials, but it needs to be respectful. And I think we're going to get back to that. There will be tensions with the Biden administration. There's no question about that. There's an assumption with people who lean to the right ideologically that we had a warm, cozy relationship with the Obama administration at the Washington Post. We did not. We were consistently denied interviews with President Obama in the final 2 years of his presidency, despite continually asking for one. And they said no repeatedly because they didn't see us as a place where they would be, go unchallenged. And that's okay, because they should be challenged, regardless of whether they're in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, regardless of who they are.
You know, some of the criticisms launched at the press, including from the former president, are often launched on social media, of course. You yourself, Marty, are a famously infrequent tweeter. I think you tweeted exactly twice in all of 2020, and you haven't posted anything in almost a year. But many journalists, including the ones who work for you, are much more active on social media. And some of them have occasionally run afoul of you and other top editors at the Post for sharing their own perspectives on news events. And sometimes those are the historically marginalized perspectives of women and people of color. Have you been too rigid in enforcing journalistic notions of objectivity?
Well, first of all, I don't tweet anymore because I've grown to dislike Twitter as a forum for sophisticated discussions of the issues of the day. But we allow people to participate in social media, of course. That's fine. They can have a social media presence. But we try to take great care with what we publish. And we have layers of editors who review what we intend to publish to ensure that they meet the standards and principles and core values of the Post. We want to hear the voices of people who come from different life experiences, people of different identities, people who see the world differently. We want them to share those perspectives internally. We want to see it manifested in the journalism that we practice. But we need to make sure that when people are on social media, that they are meeting the standards that we try to enforce in our journalism and in other fora as well.
But what about this argument, Marty, that the sort of the notions of journalistic objectivity are kind of intertwined with a degree of white privilege, that it's easier for folks like you and me to kind of detach ourselves from some of the most socially contentious issues in our country, because oftentimes they don't directly affect us in the same way that they do women and people of color, and that maybe we need to rethink those standards in journalism?
Well, we need to understand what objectivity is and what the origin of that term was. The origin really dates back 100 years to Walter Lippmann when he wrote about it. And I think people have routinely mischaracterized what objectivity is. It's not neutrality. It's not both sidesism. It's not so-called balance. It is that a recognition, in fact, that all of us have preconceptions and that we need, when we go about our reporting, that we need to approach stories in an open-minded, fair, honest way, and do our reporting and do it really thoroughly and do our research in the most rigorous possible way. And when we've done that, the notion of objectivity is that we will then report what we find in a direct, forthright, unflinching way. The idea of objectivity was to counter the propaganda of the era during the Woodrow Wilson administration. So I think it's a good concept. And I don't think the alternatives are terribly good. And the alternative is that in a newsroom that every individual should be able to say whatever he or she wants, however he or she wants to. And I don't think that really works terribly well. And it has the effect of undermining the reputation of the institution. And I think it's important to point out that we are an institution. We are not just a collection of individuals. We as an institution stand for the practice of journalism in a certain way. In fact, our principles were set down in 1935. They are on the wall as you walk into our newsroom. They've served us well all these years, and I think they continue to serve us well.
Marty, you mentioned earlier some of the challenges that you could foresee covering the Biden administration. I'm curious for the journalism industry writ large, what challenges you see in, say, the coming decade, because we've seen the pandemic really accelerate some of the existing challenges, particularly for local news.
Right. Well, there's any number of challenges, and ours is a field that will continue to be challenged. Most immediately, there is the challenge of the financial challenge, particularly for local journalism. And it's important that we have strong local journalism if we intend to have strong communities and strong and to have democracy remain strong at the local and state level. Longer term, I think we face a huge challenge, the biggest challenge that I think journalism faces, and that is that we as a society can no longer agree on a common set of facts. You know, it was Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan who famously said, you know, you're entitled to your own opinions, but you're not entitled to your own facts. Well, these days, people believe that they are entitled to their own facts. Those so-called facts may be disconnected from reality. They may not be supported by evidence, but people continue to hold on to them because they reinforce their pre-existing points of view. And so conspiracy thinking has become deeply entrenched in American society and, in fact, in other societies as well around the world. And that's a huge challenge for the press, but it's a huge challenge for democracy as well. How do we have a functioning democracy if we cannot agree on a common set of facts? And how do we have journalism if people will not accept our role as an arbiter of facts? I don't think that we are the only arbiter of fact, and we are an imperfect arbiter of fact as well. But I think we have to have, that is a huge challenge for journalism today and a huge challenge for democracy.
Marty Baron, executive editor of The Washington Post, thank you for speaking with us as you prepare to enter the next chapter of your career. And thank you also for your influence on my own career.
Thank you, Cal. I appreciate it.